CliffCentral.com.
All right. Good morning, everybody. It is Friday morning. We're already at the, oh my God, the 5th of August already. Holy shit, feels like just yesterday we were complaining about how July just snuck past, and here we are like a week down in August. It's madness. Ben hates this shit because he's like, well, you have a calendar, obviously. What do you think is going to happen in like Monday to Friday? It's still, it's something I deal with. I mean, what can we say? All right, everybody, in, on, like, subscribe, blah, 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 blah. I don't want to get through all that shit right at the beginning of my day. But it's important, and we have to talk about it. So, let's go. Do the likes and subscribes and all that stuff, please. And let's get cracking. We've got a busy day ahead of us. Everybody's got things to do, people to see, and places to go, and we're going to make it count. All right. Oh, what can I tell you? First things first, yesterday, straight after the show, I stupidly agreed to let my sister bring her puppy here. She has a little corgi puppy. It's the cutest little thing you've ever seen. Let me see if I can actually get you a picture of this crazy little animal. And she brought it here for me to look after. Which, I mean, I volunteered for this, so I have no one to blame but myself, right? And this is a very, very cute little dog. But two puppies, oh my God, it exponentially increases the amount of work that you have to do. And this little thing is just, she's properly cute. She's like a little bit younger than my Alice. I'm used to like one dog, and she behaves herself mostly and, you know, she's very sweet and good and all of that stuff. This little thing is a terror. It just seems to operate with only itself as the only rule maker, and it does whatever it wants. It's this big. It's tiny. It looks like a bunny crossed with a bear crossed with a fox. And, you know, this is also why my sister-in-law always says to me, oh, well, why don't you look after your nephews more? Why don't you offer to take them, you know, away for a weekend or whatever. I'm like, well, because it's really hard work and I didn't choose to be a parent. So just because you have this responsibility doesn't mean I have to opt in automatically for it. And don't get me wrong, I love my little nephews. I love my sister's little puppy. They're all awesome. I don't equate them by any means either. Obviously, the humans are a little bit more interesting and more complicated than the dogs. But it's still hard work, and it's work that I didn't select. So I spent most of the morning doing that. And by the way, you then write off your whole morning because there is just no way that you can get other things done when you're either looking after a child, which is a full-time fucking job, or a little dog, which is also a full-time job. So I was doing both of those, and it was a killer, an absolute killer. We are getting Ben Karpinski on a little bit later on. David says, have you got facial hair? Yep, that's one of the things that Ben and I agreed last Friday. We were going to grow our beards until I think next Friday is the cutoff that we agreed. I made a note in my diary, which means that is how long I'm going to have to keep doing this stuff. I have to tell you, this is the longest I've ever grown a beard or moustache, and I don't like it. It may work, but we'll talk about that with Ben later on. Some people, you know, it makes them feel more manly. Some people, it makes them feel less, like, tidy and groomed and all of that shit. I don't know. I haven't decided yet. But I've got another week of this from today, so let's see how it goes. It's definitely different. All right. Cliff Central is not as busy as Xi Jinping is today. Oh, yeah. He's got lots to work out. Alice. She's got a little squeaky toy, which is not the best thing for her to be doing during the show. So Xi Jinping obviously is busy sorting out the whole Nancy Pelosi saga, but the, you know, this whole Taiwan thing has got China on high alert. Just let me sort this out. Alice! No! Jesus. I could have all the things that she has to play with today. It has to be that one. Gareth, your skin is so pale and your beard is so blonde that I legit cannot see it. Oh, thank you, Carl. Very nice. So now you have some sympathy for parents who worked from home during lockdown. Oh, are you kidding? Carl, Like, I'm going to offer an unreserved apology if I said anything that in any way indicated that I was less than sympathetic. So, yes, totally understand. I bow down before parents who manage to look after kids and do work during lockdown. Must have been the hardest thing ever. A beard is a flavor saver. There's always leftovers available. That's what Karen's Boring says. It's disgusting. And, it's one of the reasons I've never really liked beards. It's like I read The Twits when I was a kid, Roald Dahl's The Twits, and Mr. Twit had this beard. And Roald Dahl describes in detail how Mr. Twit would find savory snacks in his beard from Alice. No. When he would eat lunch, stuff crumbs and like leftovers and bits and pieces would fall in his beard and then he'd eat them later. Which was so gross, and I remember as a kid just being horrified by that. Might have completely colored my experience of what beards are and do. And maybe that's why I avoided it for a long time. If you want to do a psychoanalysis of maybe why I don't like beards. Anyway, it's happening, so we'll see where it goes. So a few things for this morning. I know that I'm not a psychologist, but we deal with, everybody does, right, in conversation, tons and tons of psychological ideas, psychological discussions. It's the kind of conversation everybody thinks they can have. And frankly, why can't we? There are a lot of psychologists who are just humanities degree graduates. They don't necessarily know more than someone who's got a degree in bullshit like, social anthropology or language or poetry or, lesbian dance theory. So I don't have a whole lot of respect out of the box for people who have humanities degrees. I say that as someone who has one. So I'm allowed to be ironic about it. Psychiatry, different thing. You have to be a doctor. You prescribe medicine. That's why I love having Chris Szabo on. And as you know, Dr. Hanan is also a doctor of psychology. So it's different when you get to master's and doctor level. So that I'm totally for. Only thing is, I got thinking the other day about how psychologists, psychiatrists, and the entire pharmaceutical industry has started to make money out of, and they haven't just started, they've been making money for decades, for generations, out of making people feel like they're not mentally healthy or okay, just because they're not happy all the time. So what I mean is, if you determine that the norm is that you should be perfectly happy, bouncy, wake up in the morning feeling good, go to sleep at night feeling great, in between, smile, dance, have a great day. It occurs to me that that isn't actually what life is. It's also not what life serves up to most people. So we're made to feel bad if we are not happy all the time. Yet happy should not be considered the default. And again, I know I'm treading in dangerous territory here because there are people who've studied this their whole life long. There are people who've put together research papers on this. There are people who have, taken medicine their whole life to feel good about being unhappy for most of the day or week or month or year or life. And the reality is that life is a pretty fucking difficult roller coaster for all of us. I don't know anyone who has one of those charmed existences. I don't personally know anyone where everything has always been terrific, where all the things have always gone their way, where they wake up feeling happy and they go to sleep feeling happy, and in between the whole day they're always happy. And yet we are told, if you're anything but perfectly happy all the time, you've got a problem. You need to be on meds. You need to see somebody. You need to evaluate your life. There's something wrong, etc., etc. So I got to thinking about this, and it made no sense to me at all that somewhere along the journey, human beings who were studying the mind decided that anything outside of happy was diseased. There was a mel, there was a problem there. And everything that was happy, everything that was, you know, excitable, that was considered the default. Now, as someone, and I've spoken about this in the show before, as someone who really is happy most of the time, I don't think that that is the case for most people. I'm very, very lucky. I genuinely feel like, you know, I was born with a brain chemistry that I'm hugely reticent to play with, which is why I don't, you know, indulge in substance abuse or any of that stuff. I'm terrified of upsetting the mess. Sorry, not the mess, the mix of chemicals and turning it into a mess in my brain. I love the way I feel, and I'm very lucky to be, and I do believe it's luck, because it's a combination of genes, environment, resources, the, you know, circumstances, so family, friends, good relationships, material comfort, all of that stuff. Some people have no control over those things because sometimes through no fault of their own, and they're not happy, right? And they somehow think, oh, that's a problem. I need to be on antidepressants. And I bring all this up because this amazing thing happened the other day in the world of psychology, which people may or may not know about, but psychiatry and psychology in this case, they've decided to be very honest about, for the first time ever, the chemical theory of depression. You know how you and I have been told for years that seriously depressed people have too little serotonin, and the reason that they are depressed and they feel depressed is because of the serotonin deficiency. And they've been treating that with SSRIs for 20, 30, 40 years. And it turns out, and this is a study which I'm sure the pharmaceutical companies were not in a hurry to have published, turns out that actually they have never sufficiently demonstrated a link between serotonin deficiency and depression. It's actually never been proven that that is the cause of so many people being put on antidepressants. Now, as much as I am an amateur in this world, I don't understand any of it, I have nothing but a pedestrian's opinion about all of it, it suddenly occurred to me when that was published that there may be all kinds of things that we treat as diseases these days, that we treat as problems that need a medical solution. We medicalize things which actually might not be problems. They may just be part of the human condition. Other things may be addictions. There are probably addictions that are really bad for you. We know, we've discussed on the show a million times, how some people are addicted to exercise. Some people are addicted to work. You know, you get work addicts. And society has no judgment in a negative sense for people who are addicted to work. So you have to be really careful when you decide what the parameters are for a problem or for a malady, something that needs a solution. And I feel like there may be many other areas that in the future are revealed as being things that we've considered problems, which actually are not. They're just part of the human condition. I've never been chemically depressed, so I don't know what I'm talking about in that respect. But I don't believe, contrary to this lived experience idea that everybody's throwing around these days, that you actually have to experience something in order to be able to objectively assess it. That's wildly and demonstrably untrue. Just because someone has experienced something does not give them any more grounds to be able to evaluate it objectively. In fact, you could argue that objectively they have less ability to evaluate it because your subjective experience makes you think that you have more information and intel and data and you know, relevant, useful kind of inputs than people who are looking at it objectively from the outside. I mean, you can look at something like alcoholism, for example. You don't have to be an alcoholic to see it in other people. You don't have to be a gambling addict in order to pick up that other people are a gambling addict. And I feel like these days in society, there's such a premium put on lived experience because people want to feel special. They want to feel important. They want to feel like they have some understanding and some knowledge and some insight into things, which frankly, they might have none. You know, a lot of people just exist and a lot of people develop in a completely organic and not particularly engaged way. So you could be going through something and you're actually completely hopeless at describing what you're going through. There are many, many people I can think of just in my own life who have no ability to evaluate the world based on experience because their ability to articulate that experience is much reduced. So if you are dealing with a depressed person, for example, but they can't really describe, maybe they don't have the language, maybe they don't have the, there's a certain amount of creative disposition that has to come to the fore if you describe something accurately. Maybe they can't do that. And I keep thinking that all of this stuff, when you look at it objectively from the outside, makes people's personal experiences seem less and less valuable, a research tool. And it turns out it's not just your own experience, but even the experience of the objective scientists that isn't necessarily the most perfect tool for evaluating this stuff. Hence again, this new and developing theory that actually a lot of depression isn't caused by the lack of serotonin, that psychiatrists and psychologists have told us for most of my adult life is the cause. So we can get into that. We can talk some more about it, but I just wanted to get that off my chest this morning. There are a couple of stories in the news I also want to look at today, so let's go to some of those. It's Friday, so we don't want to get too heavy, and I certainly don't want to get too political. A lot of people here saying some funny things in the comments about how, hang on a second, my biggest disease, here we go, Corona's boring, is the government. They're addicted to my money. I hope someone makes a pill to take it away soon. Oh, if only, right? I mean, you're not going to get rid of them. They're part of your life, whether you like it or not. Tracy says some mental diseases are chemically based, while some are neurological, where your neurotransmitters are misfiring. But isn't that chemistry? Tracy, I'm not sure where you're drawing a gray distinction in a black and white world. That doesn't really figure for me, but I kind of know what you're aiming at. Theron says, I need to set boundaries all the time because other people's shit overwhelms me. It's all about energy transfer. I got in trouble because at the time I was studying psychology. Well, you don't want to be anyone's psychologist unless you're being paid. You know, Dr. Hanan will tell you that. 100%, I've always thought that psychiatrists are drug-pushing addicts themselves. Well, again, you got to be careful not to generalize because there are people who got into this and who've studied it and who know a huge amount about how the human mind works. Of course, we never know all of it. We still don't know a tenth of what we're supposed to know about the brain as opposed to the way we know, for example, how the liver works, the heart, the spleen, even the kidneys. The brain is still a mystery to humans. We haven't completely figured that shit out, and we won't during our lifetime. Exercise definitely seems to have proved itself as a technique to ward off depression, says Monique. I think it has, but that has to do with something that a lot of people have brought up this morning, actually, which I think is a very good point. Purpose, meaning, you know, if you don't have anything to do, if you don't have anything to look forward to, if you don't have anything to live for, yes, you're gonna get depressed. I hate to break it to you, but that's just the beginning of your misery. You have to have something to live for. Could be your kid, could be your wife, girlfriend, it could be your job, it could be a combination of those things, it could be a passion project, a hobby, it could be pretty much anything. But if you have no reason to wake up in the morning, you're buggering around. Your life is going to be terrifically fucking unhappy. Propaganda says it's because you're single. I wonder. Corona's boring says two concerts 3 times a day will turn that frown upside down. Jesus. Two concerts 3 times a day. I've only ever taken concerta when I was studying. And this is long after varsity. It's like when I had to study for a course, for example, that I was doing. And that shit like keeps you awake. If you're taking 3 times a day, 2 of them 3 times a day, Corona's boring. You must be buzzing like a fucking car battery. Derek says, I'm a social worker. Do you want to insult me too? Sure. Why not? Fortunately, these days, says Parallel Parking, if you are not happy, there is another TikTok to watch. Well, I can't wait for you to hear this interview with Johan Hari, who came into the studio on Tuesday. And we talked for probably an hour, maybe a little bit more, about focus and about paying attention, something which humans are struggling with more than ever in the year 2022. And I think it's something that a lot of people are powerless to resist. This idea of, screens, being addicted to screens, it's a major, major problem. In the very beginning of his book, Johan Hari talks about his godson who is addicted to screens and how he tackles that with him as someone who cares about him, right? And what it actually does, he observes this from, the point of view of being someone who cares, but he also observes it as a writer. So he writes about it like somebody who, for example, would be, taking down notes. These are his behaviors because he's on a screen the whole time. This is how his concentration span has dropped. This is what he does when he's bored, anxious, lonely, sad, grabs the phone, starts looking at the screen. And Johan talks about actual, and this is what I love about this book, by the way, besides the storytelling, which is immaculate, he also talks about the way that he has figured you can lower your dependence on technology and on distraction. Like he talked about, for example, the average person doing a job of work, if you're distracted by a WhatsApp, by someone coming and talking to you while you're involved in a task, a screen with the news on, or something else, he said it takes you 23 minutes to get back to where you were in the task, to get the level of mental acuity and engagement that you were at. This is why when people say to you, oh, you didn't reply to my message, what are you, too busy? Your answer should be yeah, because even though it'll take me 2 seconds to reply to your stupid WhatsApp, it's going to take me 23 minutes to get back into the flow that I was in while I was doing really valuable work. So in other words, don't respond to the messages just because they come through. People can wait. It'll be fine. I love this focus feature on my phone. I don't know if you found it yet or whether you use it. I think we discussed this briefly with Lebang the other day. But if you go onto your phone, there's a new iPhone anyway. There's a new feature called Focus. And you can set up different ones. Holiday, family, work, whatever it might be. And you can actually choose which apps will be able to send you notifications and which people will be able to send you notifications. And the rest will just quietly go about their business. They won't buzz. It won't appear on the screen. You'll be completely removed from that stuff for the time that you've decided to be on that Focus profile. So try it out. Tracy said, oh, here we go. Carl's having a go at Derek, the social worker, says, I used to work with Derek. That fat little bitch is not a social worker. Give him no sympathy. Love it. Our audience, the meanest people in the world. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Gareth, how you doing?
Good. How's the beard coming along?
Yeah, pretty good, hey? It's
Really?
getting thicker. People are noticing. It's just I think this is who I am now. I'm going to stick to it. Summer, winter, whatever. I'm bearded.
I don't know. By Friday next week, I'm gonna have enough. I think I'll be over it. You can carry on doing it if you want to,
But
but nah, I'm gonna be done.
have you got a big bristly beard? Like yours is quite coarse,
It
right?
feels bristly. I mean, I've never had facial hair, so ever since I can remember, the longest it's got is now, ever.
Yeah,
So,
likewise.
yeah.
So we both on personal best, but mine is like it's quite soft hair. So I mean, we all have these
No,
different
it's not
things,
bristly.
right?
Yeah, mine feels like oh, what's the way to describe it? Almost like a Jack Russell's hair would.
Yeah, okay, so bristly-ish.
Bit bristly, yeah, I suppose. G Star wants to know, am I drinking a beer? No, it's this is not a beer. This is San Pellegrino mineral water. That's what that is. Ooh, Italian mineral water. How fancy. So Ben and I actually are planning a bit of a day tomorrow. You are going to teach me to enjoy rugby without actually watching rugby.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously you can watch. That's one of the things. But no, I mean, like the thing about watching rugby is getting around people at a certain time of the day where there's something going on. So
We've done this
even
before. I
though, you know,
mean,
like the,
I've watched rugby with you before, and in fact, I was with you and your brother the one day. And we went out to this place in Joburg and had an awesome time. Right?
yeah, you completely outed me. So that game was against the All Blacks and we won. So I'm kind of thinking you're the lucky charm,
Okay.
and that is why I'm putting this together
There we
so the
go.
Springboks can beat. Look how patriotic I am. I'm manipulating my friends to the will of the win.
All right. So you and I and a couple of other people, at this point, it sounds like quite a crowd. It's like we've got 10 people or something. We're all going to go watch it together. And we will report back next week, Friday, about how it goes. Because my problem is, I really don't care about the game. So I'll have fun conversations. I'll order drinks. I'll have something to eat. I'll talk nonsense. So I have fun anyway. You don't have to worry about me. It's not like you know, you've done this
Yeah,
before.
sure.
But the
Obviously, but I mean,
rugby itself is
there's.
just an excuse to get together, right?
It is. And at the same time, it's kind of like a free show because people react to what happens in the field. So normally, when you go to a bar, everyone's just talking and just being. Whereas now,
Okay.
because the rugby's on, everyone's playing a role in this fantastic soap opera of Saturday South African life. And this is one of the reasons why I love sports so much.
It does bring people together. I mean, there's a huge social value to this stuff. Massive.
Yeah. So, Gareth, I just want to touch on that thing that you were talking about before I got on here about being
Focus.
distracted, not being able to focus. Wow, this has been such a revelation to me to like really audit the days. And I just got to say to everybody who still sends voice notes
Oh,
out of
God.
choice,
Oh,
you
God.
are a bunch of dicks. You're a bunch of
Okay.
dicks.
There are
It's so
rules.
demanding.
Let's
It's
just talk
so
about this.
demanding.
Let's talk about the rules of voice notes. And there are a couple of people who are serial offenders in my life. You must never send a voice note unless you are driving or for some reason you cannot type. Like you've been tied up by a dominatrix or, you know,
Yes.
you've had your arms and hands chopped off by a Saudi crown prince. There's no reason that if you can type, you're just too lazy and you decide to send a voice note. So number one, only send a voice note if typing is completely not an option. Because also people can't always listen to a voice note. You can always check a message if it's typing and
Taxi,
ignore it.
always.
Yeah. So I don't even like to receive messages based on everyone else's timeline. I like the idea that this author, Johann Hari, was telling me about, that you go into these focus modes and that you put your phone into, well, I think they call it a case safe. It's like this plastic thing that you put your phone in. It's like a prison for a phone, and you set a timer on it. So he will put it in
Yeah.
for like 2 minutes or 2 hours or a whole day, depending on what he's got to do. And then his phone is literally trapped in this thing. The only way to get it out, if it hasn't run out of time, and you decide on the little thing on the top how long you want to put it in the prison for, is you have to break the thing and you have to buy a brand new one. So it's not a great idea for just wasting money and being stupid. But voice notes, just to go back to that, under a minute, essential. In fact, under 30 seconds is preferable. Am I right?
Yeah, exactly. But it all just comes back to the fact that your hands have been compromised in some way or another. Mm. So unless you've been Khashoggied or you're driving, I think those are the two main rules we got going here. But if you're having a conversation, and it's like during the day. So right now, actually, a friend of mine is now trying to message me. And he's sending voice notes. It's like, no. And like they're 5, 7, 10 seconds. It's like, you can type that.
Yeah.
You really can. Because I can't get to that now for an hour because it requires everything of me to not focus on this voice note. It's just rude.
Well, also,
be considerate.
I mean, most of the time, if you're going to have a voice note, please, for God's sake, let it just be information. But I've always felt this way about phone calls, too. They're a very invasive thing. I've never liked phone calls. I never like talking to someone on the phone for more than 10 minutes. And that's people that I have important things to talk about. The person I've probably spent the longest with on the phone in my life is my business partner, right? And we talk about mostly business. So that would make sense. I can understand that. I can make that kind of time commitment. And it doesn't feel like I'm being distracted or abused. If people, and I know it's different, again, men and women are different, and this is a big generalization, but women love to talk. They love to catch up, love to shoot the breeze. They like to find out, how was your day? What did you get up to? How's this one? What's going on with that one? Is everybody okay? All that kind of shit. Like, I'm not interested in that. If I'm with you in person, if I'm actually talking to a living human being and they're in the same room as me, cool. We can have those conversations. And I'm not disinterested unless you're a complete, like, zero to me. So I'll have those conversations, but not on the phone. The phone is for information.
Yeah. So propaganda makes a decent point here about the fact that you don't have tone in text.
Yeah.
So voice notes allow you to have tone or texture to all your messages.
Right.
Yeah, I kind of get that. A few months ago, when I was still on dating apps, some girls would just open up with voice notes. Now,
oh,
I wasn't sure what to take of that. I thought, like, confident, that's pretty much what you look for in a person. But also, kind of annoying, because now you've already heard these people talk. So, like, the mystery is gone. They generally had pretty whiny voices, and they were, like, minute long. It's like, fuck.
Mm.
This already feels like hard work.
Yeah, I Gord Laws is a major, major... He's a criminal in this respect, because he sends these long, I call them podcasts. We discussed this on the show years ago when he used to send them. We used to play them on the show. Poor Gord, he didn't know that his personal voice notes to me were going to be played on the show. But that's actually a great way to get people to stop. You don't have to have your own podcast to do this, but you just like play it back to them. You say, have you heard how long this is? And you actually hold it to them and go, can you better listen to this for like fucking 3 minutes? Because I can't. 30 seconds, cut off. There's no need. If it's that important.
It's a social dump.
If it's really important, you'd rather just go and see the person. You know, these days, if you make the investment, because let's face it, petrol's expensive. Nobody needs to go somewhere unless they need to go somewhere. So if you actually are with people, you spend the time, you're in their company, you're having conversation, to me that is an investment in each other. You're actually taking the trouble. And I think it's a big deal. And you only do that for your friends, people you really care about, relationship people, family, you know, your top sort of 20% of all the people you know. And even that's a stretch. Otherwise, you're wasting money. You're wasting money. Because these days, it is not worth driving to a place to see people unless you either have business with them or you really care about them. Full stop. I mean, I'm preaching to the choir.
That's how
I'm preaching to the choir with you, because you don't do this. You don't go and see anybody unless they're really important to you.
Yeah, I'm trying to work on that. But yeah, that's basically the last 5 years of my life.
Linda says,
so I see.
Linda says voice notes are annoying, especially if you work in an open plan office. Ugh, totally
agree. Exactly. And most people do. Like, I have an office, albeit a pretty modest one.
Yeah.
But so few people have offices nowadays. You want to send voice notes? Fuck off. I see a message here, Gareth, because I was just catching up. Parallel Parking says that Jane has outed me as a shallow employee. What is that about?
Let me just find this quickly.
627. What is that old wizened trout been saying about me now?
Oh, no. So we had Jane on I think it was Wednesday with Simpiwe and Ryan. And she was on because she was looking for a part-time job for Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. So I thought it'd be fun to have her on the show. And also, you know, Jane never really minces her words. She doesn't like a lot of people. A lot of people don't like Jane. She didn't say anything particularly horrible about you. She just said that she didn't like the fact that you that you went off the show and now you've come back. Jane, she had this problem with Sia. She had this problem with Simpiwe. Basically, if you work with us and you're there every day and then you go away and then you come back, even if it's on a part-time basis, like you're on the show on Fridays, she doesn't approve of that at all. Like, she sees you come in and record your own show that you're doing, which we must give a plug to in a minute. And she's like, ah, there's Ben. He's come crawling back. You know, that kind of shit. Jane sees things in a very binary sense with that. You know, loyalty is a massively important thing to her. And she always sees it as, if once you've left, you must fuck off. You're not allowed back. That's the way she sees the world.
I would love for someone to give up a few years of their life to do like a full-on psychology.
Oh, God. An analysis on Jane. Oh, my God.
It would be groundbreaking and at the same time damning towards the human race. The person would probably commit suicide, but it'd be quite a piece of work. Well,
they'll kill themselves. So Kapamba says exactly what is the basis of this interview with Johan Hari, which we will put out next week. What an interesting guy, huh? And what a great book. Kapamba says, I use the fuck out of my focus modes because my work tends to follow me home. This week I bought a lockbox in which I lock my phone at night until the morning. That's such a good move. That is properly taking care of yourself. And you will reap enormous benefits. They've actually measured how the attention span of adults has deteriorated in the last 40 years. They've actually monitored a whole lot of people over a period of, say, 40 years, and they've watched how their ability to concentrate has got less and less and less. And, of course, a huge part of this is, but it's not the whole part, social media and devices and screens and all that shit. But apparently, according to the smart experts on this stuff, they say it's been happening for at least the last three generations, which is really interesting. Hmm. So probably started with your grandparents. And it would have started because the village mindset, the idea that, you know, you only really knew a small handful of people and you didn't even know them that well, but they were the only source of information once. Most people couldn't read. Yeah. So you didn't know about what was going on in, you know, Borneo or in California or in Venezuela. You only knew what was going on in your own village. So there's this information overload, and that's really started happening only in the last 100 years or so. And it's really affected people quite badly because our brains, despite the incredible opportunities that technology and information represents, our brains can only process a certain amount of stuff in a certain amount of time. We're just not capable of more. And you can only really think about one thing at a time, no matter how you might be one of those people who thinks you can multitask, right? They're those people who think they can do 10 things at once. They can, like, while they're on the phone talking to someone, they can also draw a picture, or they can, I don't know, type up a reply to an email. You think you can, but you're actually not doing either very well. You can't. So, okay, a couple of comments here that I think we need to address. Psychologists love depression. They relegate everything to it. I have LL, which is none of comments based explain. Ask Dr. Hanan. I was only correctly diagnosed in 2018. Every doctor before said it was depression. What is LL, though? I don't know what that is, Sanela, so you've got to explain that to me. Theron says, I'm trying to avoid WhatsApps unless it's for work. Voice notes become way too time-consuming. Absolutely. Voice to text, says Parallel Parking, will completely remove typing by 2025. Typing will then be a cancel word because it means putting people into categories, which is apparently also very racist. Let's leave this alone. I don't want to spend the whole morning talking about stuff that I've already spoken about in the first half hour, but
yeah,
there's other stuff.
What you were saying about generations, their attention spans, this week I started watching this incredible show on Netflix. Like, I haven't watched TV much in the last month or two.
Mm-hmm.
And Netflix has got this show called Trainwreck Woodstock 99. It is exactly what the name says. It's the biggest train wreck of humankind, probably in our lifetime, actually.
So, all right. So Woodstock, we all know the original... Woodstock back in 69 was this enormous music event. It was, you know, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin. There were all these incredible bands. It was the greatest music festival ever. And people say it's never been surpassed. The quality of the talent on the stage alone was spectacular. But it was also like a big hippie thing. It was like the apex of hippiedom because people were living in this mud and filth and squalor. They were all dancing around with no clothes on, having like wild sex with each other in tents and smelling disgusting. And like it was peak hippie. Am I right?
Well, it was kind of like where Burning Man's essentials essentially come from when you think about it, because there were free kitchens, people were sharing decent, softish drugs, and there was no aggression or violence, and there was a time where people were culturally coming together to express themselves. So one of the co-founders obviously was young back then, and he decided that his kids' generation needed a Woodstock.
Oh, God.
Boy, was he fucking wrong. So, like... This documentary is so good. It's three parts. I've only watched the first two. I don't want to give away too many spoilers because you have to unpack what an absolute disaster this thing is. It's like, as the name suggests, it's a train wreck. You can't help but look.
Oh,
but it's all going so badly. So when you think 69, the culture was of peace and love and harmony and people trying to work together, all this kind of stuff. 1999 was the time of American Pie, frat boy apex humor, Fight Club, the movie, all these angry bands like Rage Against the Machine, Limp Bizkit, Korn. So you can see where I'm going with this. Like the sort of vibe going into this thing wasn't exactly ever going to be peace, love, and all this kind of crap. They were trying to do that. And now the place that they had it wasn't some beautiful woodland, glen, foresty, rolling hills place.
Mm-hmm.
It was an ex-Air Force base. So I think loads of concrete... Like horrible buildings. It is terrible. And then you add the hottest days of July in New York State. So you got 250,000 people in a hot asphalt scenario. You've got angry bands on stage telling the youth to go and fucking break things. It all becomes the most giant disaster. I can't believe I didn't... I was 17 at the time, so I probably didn't get a lot of news back then. But this documentary is the biggest train wreck. It's so like you watch this and you just think, oh my fuck, how did this happen? How did the army not get called in? How did the people survive?
See, I knew that this had happened, but I must be honest with you, I paid very little attention. And it happened during our lifetimes, and it happened while I was doing a radio show. So I should have been, I was on varsity radio at the time. I was still studying on campus, but I should have known about this, right? And I didn't know of the detail. So do they have actual footage of what happened as well?
So much. it's well documented, okay? So going back to what made Woodstock so great, it was like not for profit. It literally was a social movement.
Hmm.
Woodstock 99 was like commercialism at its ugliest. Wow. So like it's obviously hugely hot, okay? So hydration is a massive thing. You weren't allowed to bring in your own water, but they would charge you $4 back then in 1999. If you were to go to 7-Eleven, it would cost you like 65 cents. So they were literally fleecing you. It was like $9. Everything was four times the price. So they had you there, and now they were just shaking you down. So people were angry about that. But then the whole culture of like, every girl got harassed, basically. Yeah. There was sexual assaults left, right, and center. The MTV crew were broadcasting this thing, and people were throwing stuff at them. Like, at so many different stages, the stage was just full with plastic bottles, and people were just breaking stuff all around. And then literally all hell broke loose because of the fact that it was just the most disgusting exploitation of everything. So the partygoers felt they were being exploited. The organizers were exploiting them in many, many ways. And they just revolted, and mosh pits were popping up. The bands were just going crazy. It was like an apocalyptic setting, and they have footage of absolutely every moving second of it.
Oh, my God. All right. It's called Woodstock 99. Is that it?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's hugely tragic. And if people ever say, oh, you know, it's so shit in 2022. You get these time zones, right? So Woodstock was the original one, was so caring and peace, love, and all that kind of stuff. In 1999, if you would think there was toxic masculinity now, back then is when it was at its prime.
Yeah.
I think we've come on so far since then. People were fucking disgusting back then. And like, you have to watch it to appreciate how good things are right now. I think, you know, we've almost found an equilibrium where people know how to treat each other and we know how to act. And I know this sounds a weird thing to say because people are so fucked up nowadays. But go back to Woodstock 99 and get a snapshot of how bad it actually was. It's so bad.
It's hilarious. You know, someone was telling me, a friend of mine who went to one of these European festivals like Tomorrowland or whatever, that they always charge you an absolute fortune. And then a friend of mine who's in the events business said to me, but that makes sense because you're paying for the whole event, right? And your ticket price doesn't cover the cost of like the stage and all of that shit. So they have to make money off of drinks. And he was telling me that at some of these festivals, you can't buy tap water. You can't get just tap water. And when you go to wash your hands in the bathrooms, they actually put salt in the water so that you have to buy mineral water, which is wild. It never occurred to me that that's what people might do. So in other words, if you're a cheapskate, you might go to the bathroom and drink from the tap, right? Apparently you can't do that at these festivals. They don't allow you to do it because they're worried about like, you know, people getting sick from the water or whatever. But that's an excuse too. They just want to sell more bottles of water at an exorbitant price, like €9 or whatever it is.
It's kind of the same in those big clubs in Ibiza because people generally go there and they're taking drugs.
Right.
So they want water.
They sell more water than they do alcohol. Yeah.
Yeah, because you go in there, and that's another thing about Woodstock 99. They had a rave hangar.
Wow.
So basically, there was like there was the main rock stage where people were like killing each other until midnight, and then everyone sort of like zombies filtered into the rave hangar.
Unbelievable!
It's one of the best things. It's one of the best things I've seen, really, and I'm sure lives were wrecked. But so this was also 250,000 people,
and this was just before the age of mobile phones, right?
Yeah.
99.
Yeah.
So Carol says, like, Ben, episode 3 will knock your socks off. Very tragic indeed. Have you watched all of them or are you just halfway in?
No, I've watched 2 episodes. The third one I'll watch tonight. Yeah, so if you're looking for something to watch this weekend.
Yeah.
Sure. It's a thing.
It sounds amazing. Okay, I've got to put it on my list of things. Speaking of a list of things to do, Ben sent me a podcast the other day with this guy called Andrew Tate. I've never heard of. I didn't know who the fuck he was. I had no idea. I had to Google the dude. He claims to be the most Googled person ever, but I don't know that that's true. You know, people are always claiming that they're the most famous person on the internet or whatever. But what an interesting guy. So it turns out he's a fighter. He has some pretty wild opinions about, in particular, women, money, human relations, the differences between men and women. That was kind of the gist of it. But Ben sent me this podcast to listen to. I think it was last Saturday. And I listened to it all in that one day. And we spoke about it later in the afternoon. What an incredible, like, what a deadly, dangerous human being this is. He just mouths off. And some of the stuff he says is exactly the opposite of politically correct. So he's bound to be like napalm to woke people. It's insane, right?
He really is. And I also never heard of this guy since last week. And all the people that I know who know things about the internet also never heard of this guy.
Right.
But he has been this internet sensation because the moment you watch one Andrew Tate video on YouTube, YouTube will literally send you 17,000. It's almost like I actually have to go and delete YouTube and re-sign in or do something because every video on my home screen now is this guy's face.
Oh, really?
So I don't know what business is behind him and his ways, but I found another podcast that he did over a year ago, before he obviously became hugely famous, became quite sensationalist. And even though the podcast I sent you, I thought was really good, this other one I listened to from over a year ago is before he became so ranty and before he became so incredibly outspoken. His fundamentals and I think really good ideas are still there. If you want to find it on Spotify, it's on the Pomp Show, P-O-M-P.
The Pomp Show. The Pomp Show.
Yeah. If you listen to it, it's the Pomp Show.
Go on.
I absolutely just love how succinctly this guy puts the things that we speak about a lot as well. So, you know, like what COVID means to the greater future of humanity, the richest people in the world or the freest people in the world, how he seems to hack life by, it's just so simple the way he says things. And a lot of the things that, a lot of reasons why people hate people like him is because no one ever has the balls to do the things that they do, that they can never imagine that they can be as rich as him, and they can never be as single-minded as this guy. And obviously, he's a huge narcissist, and people are going to take him in pieces about,
he reminded me about certain things. So I honestly had never ever heard him before. It was the first time on Saturday last week that I listened, and I listened to this, I think it was an hour and a half, two-hour interview, which was mostly entertaining, but there were parts of it that were just really heavy going and I didn't enjoy it. And he seems to be like one of those jet engines that kind of fuels itself. Like eventually you can hear that his own hot air is propelling him into the next sentence. It's like, you know, he's totally self, he's self-obsessed, self-absorbed. But he's also, I mean, he does say some really interesting things. I mean, one of the things that I thought stuck out is he doesn't let women drive his expensive cars ever. And his reason for that, I thought, was pretty weird, but it kind of makes a bit of sense. And it's going to upset a lot of women this morning. But he says, if a friend of yours, a guy friend of yours, crashes your car, he says, if one of my boys crashed my car, and he's got this funny accent that's kind of half American, half English as well, which is very odd, then a guy will always say, so if you crashed my car, Ben, you would say, oh, Jesus, I'm so sorry. I wasn't concentrating. I'm going to fix it. I'll pay you back. It's going to take me like a year and a half or whatever. I'll sort this out. You know, if whether or not you're insured, I fucked up. Let me sort this out.
I would take it upon myself. I would take it upon myself to fix what I have done completely, 100%.
This guy says women have no honor in that respect. They'll go, oh my God, I crashed your car. I'm so sorry. It was like, this guy came out of nowhere. It wasn't my fault. I don't know what to do. This is such a disaster. Oh, I'm so embarrassed or whatever. But they will not offer to sort the problem out. They will not take personal responsibility for it, which I thought was pretty hilarious. It's not something that a lot of people would agree with. A lot of people actually would say, that's bullshit. That's not true. But in my experience, even for little things, let's not say things as big as writing off a supercar, that's about right, you know? Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, no, I broke the guys, bars. Like, I remember there was this this one quite pretty girl that I invited to my house once. She broke this thing. She's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I don't know what to do. She never offered to repay or replace or fix what she'd done. She took no actual responsibility. She wanted me to know that she felt bad about it, and that was all.
Well, look, I mean, there are so many different things to go through with this guy. If you watch some videos, you could watch some of these sensationalist bullshit ones, and you'll hate him. Listen to him on the Pomp Show before you get any ideas or opinions about him. Because I think a lot of the time, to your jet engine analogy, people like us become very drunk on their own fame and their own hype because they have to create it in order to create the identity which they're looking for.
Oh, totally, it's good. It's going to make me so unpopular, but I even think that's happened with people like Jordan Peterson. I mean, I do believe that Jordan has become a little bit self-involved. And I'm not talking about when he, you know, had the benzodiazepine addiction, which he had to sort out, and he was on a major health scare and, you know, didn't do very well. But he's kind of become a little high on his own supply. And I don't mean that he's not making sense. I don't mean that he's not one of the smartest people in the world, because he is. And I love Jordan Peterson, and I've listened to him for years. I've interviewed him. I like the guy very much, and I do think he's doing a lot of good in the world. There are some people who cannot stand him because of his political point of view, or because he brings facts to discussion that very often isn't about facts, and that upsets people who don't have the facts themselves. But I do think it happens to a lot of people, including this Andrew Tate guy, is that people just get, they start enjoying being famous for whatever reason, more than thinking about the stuff that made them famous in the beginning that actually mattered to people. They get high on their own supply is the best way to describe it. And it's happened to a lot of people I know, and a lot of people that I listen to and pay attention to. And you just eventually you go, this kind of, he's beating the same drum. And this isn't true for Jordan or for this Andrew Tate, who I've only listened to this one podcast of, but it's true for a lot of people. It even, you know, becomes true for friends of yours if you're paying enough attention. Same stuff keeps coming up round and round and round. And eventually it's like, I'm not learning anything.
Well, you also got to think of it like this guy is trying to perpetuate certain information and actions, these kind of things, because he's got businesses that he runs as well. So if you look at a TV show, like if a TV show is quite controversial in season one, it can't just stay on a level. It has to keep going up and up and up and up. Eventually it'll explode and fall away. So this Andrew Tate guy is exactly that. So that's why I say only listen to this one podcast about him. Don't get into the rabbit hole about all these other things. And ultimately, just like Jordan Peterson, take the ideas, never the personality.
Yeah.
And I think this is exactly why I share podcasts like this with you, because neither of us are looking for role models. Neither of us are looking for best friends. But we love to challenge things. We love to talk about things, because that takes us closer to enlightenment and just being smarter about how people operate. And the way this guy has seen the world, how he's made money, and the way he sees human nature, I think there's some invaluable lessons to learn from what he's about, whether you like him or not. It's exactly the same with Trump.
Yeah.
People hated Trump.
Oh, wow, yeah.
They forgot the fact that he's another human with ideas who is saying things. Mm-hmm. But people became so blind with the rage for someone that they despise that they stopped listening to what they're going to say. This always comes back to the saying that we said in the show so many times. Before something must fall, find out why it rose. Andrew Tate is the sensation. Why?
G.K. Chesterton, who probably wrote more brilliant things down than even Winston Churchill's reputed to have said. You know that Churchill effect, that any great quote must be attributed to Churchill. G.K. Chesterton is the guy who probably should get more of the credit for those really like snappy, witty sayings. But of course, he lived at a time where there weren't TikTok videos. Otherwise, he would be the most famous person in the world. He said famously, "Before you break down a fence, find out why it was put up," which is precisely the point that you make here. It is also the essence of being a conservative politically. Conservatives are reticent to break down tradition. They don't break the fence down. They assume it was built for a reason, whereas progressives will break it down because they believe they'll be able to build something better in its place. Very often they break it down and then don't build anything. And then whether you're keeping something in or keeping something out, it ends up doing exactly that. It comes in or it goes out. So, again, this is sensible stuff. All right, it's 7 o'clock. We're going to come back in a little while. We're also going to be joined in a short while by Sifiso Nene, who is a South African comedian. Also an actor, best known for winning the first season of SABC One's reality competition Talent Search, So You Think You're Funny, all the way back in 2009. He's originally from Durban, and you will know him from the Pure Monate show, where he was a scriptwriter. He's also been on a number of comedy shows, including one with Kagiso Lediga on Mzansi Magic back in 2010. 2012, he won the Audience Choice Award at the South African Comics Choice Awards, and he is an extremely funny human being. I'm always pleased to meet new and funny people. So we're going to stick around and have some fun with Sfiso in just a short while. Also, Borge will be with us a bit later on with some motoring, and Ben and I will be here to keep you company through your Friday morning to start your day. Got hopefully a productive, exciting day ahead of you, and a weekend still to come. Loads of stuff to be excited about. Stick around. CliffCentral.com